Hello, I'm Kirsty Young, and this is a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For rights reasons, we've had to shorten the music. This is a recording as it was being broadcast, rather than the studio recording. And for that reason, you may hear some interference and some degradation in the sound quality. The programme was originally broadcast in 1968.
Each week, a well-known person is asked the question, if you were to be cast away alone on a desert island, which 8 gramophone records would you choose to have with you? As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
On our desert island this week, ladies and gentlemen, Arthur Askey.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome return of an old favourite. You have been here before, haven't you, Arthur?
This is what, the third time?
Your third time, yes, at 13-year intervals. Last time was 1955, and the first time was just after I divided the programme, 1942.
When I was 12.
That's it. Well, I was just a boy at the time.
Only a kid, I remember, yes. But I remember sitting here with me eating suit and the collagen in the way.
Uh-huh. Now, well, put it in your book, 13-year intervals. We want you back in 1981.
Put that down now, don't I?
Right, yes.
Well, I've got witnesses, don't forget. I've got scruples, but we won't talk about them.
What would you want these 8 records to do for you on a desert island? Remind you of the past, cheer you up, do what?
Memories of home, passing the time, or something immediate, you know.
What's the first one you've chosen? What's the top
Well, the
of
first
the
one, you imagine me on a desert island. I'm on a different one this time.
Yes.
I've been different each time. I've got on a different island, you know. But anyway, this one is a beautiful island. It's got a lovely sandy beach, blue sky, birds singing. So I wake up in the morning, I rub the sand out of my eyes at the Japanese sandman, and what nicer melody could I wake up to than Morning by Grieg? Grieg's a jolly good fella. Isn't that lovely?
Isn't that lovely, yes. Grieg's Morning from the Peer Gynt, Sweden. It was played by the Oslo Philharmonic Orchestra.
It's a lovely melody. I like it.
We've heard you sing many times, Arthur. As a child, in spite of your singing, did you have a musical education?
Yes, a fair musical education. I learned the piano from the lady next door when I was a kid in Liverpool. And I had to do an hour's practice every day, and if I didn't do it, she knew, because we had very thin walls in these terraced houses down by the Dockland in Liverpool. And she made me practice, you see. She said, you didn't practice on Tuesday. I said, no, well, I went to cricket. And then, of course, I had a very good smattering of music from my experience as a choir boy.
Yes, I remember. I'd seen a photograph of you in a surplus. You
look
very good.
Oh, don't I look like surplus army stock. Yeah.
Well, let's have your second record now.
My second record. Now, what? Well, having sung like that, the pure soprano, may I go to one of the, for me, one of the greatest musicals of all time, Fair Lady, and Julie Andrews singing I Could Have Danced All Night.
I could have danced all night, could have danced all night, and still have begged for more. I could have spread my wings and done a thousand things I've never done.
After your enormous success in Liverpool Cathedral with the Liverpool Sound, did you go straight into the theatre, Arthur?
Oh, no, no. Well, I was 11 in 1911, so you can work my age out. And I stayed at school till I was 16, And then I went into the education offices in Liverpool.
As well.
And I stayed there for, oh, as a junior clerk.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed there for 8 years.
Yes.
And used to run an amateur concert party in and around Liverpool, you know,
mm-hmm.
and entertain the wounded soldiers. Tommy Hanley and I used to do that. Me as a boy soprano, Tommy as a baritone.
Really?
And
when did you start comicking?
Well, when my voice broke, because I found that I used to get excused from school as a boy soprano to go and entertain the soldiers, singing Roses of Picardy or something like that. When my voice broke, I thought, oh, lummy, I won't get any afternoons off or excused homework. So I decided, as I'd always been the choir comic and the school comic, that I'd take up comicking instead of singing straight songs.
And still get your afternoons off?
And still get the afternoon and the evening sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And when did you decide to give up this nice, safe job in the education office?
Well, much against my father's will, of course it was. But I, as I say, I ran this amateur concert party, and I was seen by a man who used to have a little theatre at Rock Ferry, across the Mersey, you know, just mm-hmm. over the other side. And he had this place, and he saw me working with my amateur concert party, and he wrote to me and said, have you ever thought of going professional? Because I think you've got something. He didn't say what it was, but he thought I had something.
Yeah.
And he put me in touch with a touring concert party, and I gave up a job in the education offices, £3 a week, to go into the theatrical business at £6.10 a week.
Gave up a pension, too?
I did, and they still owe me that.
Did?
Oh, I'll probably be after them before long.
You stayed in concert party for quite a few years, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I was in concert party 15 years, learning my trade.
What did you do the rest of the year?
Well, the rest of the year, I was doing provincial pantomimes or... My main source of income was after-dinner entertaining. That was Masonics or city companies or staff dues or... I had a big connection there.
You could play several Masonics in one evening, couldn't you?
Yes, I should say in the middle 30s I was averaging about four a night.
Were you?
Yes, I was.
When did you make your first broadcast?
Well, the very first one, it was in the Stone Ages, 1800 and frozen to death. No, it was about 1900 and... 25, I was with my first concert party, and they stuck up some gear that was a microphone, and we were broadcast from the Alexander Gardens at Weymouth.
There was one series of broadcasts that made a great difference to your career.
Ah, I'll say. Bandwagon.
Bandwagon, indeed. Well, we'll talk about Bandwagon in a bit more detail presently. Let's have another record. What shall we have next?
Well, I'm going into my classical mood again. I didn't know whether to ask you to play a selection from Kismet, I'll go back to the original Borodin, and I'd like the Polotsvian dances. That lovely bit where, take my hand, I'm a stranger in paradise. Lovely.
An excerpt from Borodin's Polotsian Dances, the Philharmonia Orchestra conducted by Nikolai Malko. Now, Bandwagon, with you and Richard Murdoch, this was the first BBC comedy series with regular comedians at a regular time every week, wasn't it?
8 o'clock every Wednesday night, that's right.
Had you worked with Richard Murdoch before?
No, he was quite new to me because, actually, there was another fellow came to the first rehearsal for Bandwagon. And whether he didn't like the look of me or the look of the script, but he didn't turn up for the second one, said he got a small part in a film.
Mm-hmm.
And so Gordon Cryer, who was associated with the show then, Harry Pepper, said, I know a young fellow, he's just come out of a show at the Savile Theatre, and I think he'd match up with Arthur very well. He's tall, good-looking, well-educated. So that put me in my place. And they brought Dickie along, yeah. And our chemistry was right. We worked out marvellously.
And was it an immediate success, Bandwagon, or did it take a bit of time to get into its stride?
It didn't take too long. The first three programmes, with all the hoo-ha that went ahead of it about the resident comedian and the first big show of radio, the critics rather panned it, you see. And Dickie Murdoch and I went to John Watt, who was then head of Light Entertainment, and said, we don't think the scripts we're being given are very good. We feel we could write better ourselves. And John said, well, if you think you can do it, we'll have a bash, mm-hmm. Because you're not going on after six. However, we made such an impact that we were given another six, and by the time we'd done 12, we were, well, nationwide idols.
There are still people who look up at the top floor of broadcasting houses they go by, and they say that's where Big and Stinker had their flat.
That's right, and they look for me comms on the aerial, yes. There, you know.
Lewis the Goat.
Mrs. Bagwash.
There was a stage version of Bandwagon too, wasn't there?
Yes, that finished up playing at the London Palladium in 1939, and, the world was my oyster at that time. Everything had happened, I got a long film contract, and then, of course, the war broke out. Mm. So I went back to square one.
Well, let's have your fourth record after. What next?
Well, we've been talking about Bandwagon. I'd ask you, Roy, has anyone ever had the temerity to ask for one of their own records?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I knew you'd say that because I can remember hearing a young lady once asking for at least, I think it was 7 of 8 records with her own. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember, yes.
You remember, yes. Mm. You're not as old as you look, you see. But, this is half mine. This is half Dickie and I, and this is a record called The Proposal.
Are you ready now? Now, I'm knocking at the boo bar door, knock, knock.
Come in.
I'm inside your boudoir.
I know.
Oh, Nausea, do you know what I'm here for?
I've got a damn good idea.
The Proposal, Richard Murdoch and, what's his name? Bandwagon, the first of many radio series. What was your first television, Arthur?
The first television, I used to come into this very building in the middle 30s, in the experimental stages with Baird. I used to come in an afternoon, get a guinea and a half, and look into a bright white light with railings running in front of me, and told to keep my hands close to my face, not spread too much, yeah. And saying, oh, what a glorious thing to be, you know. So that was the middle 30s, but then I did Alexander Palace shows in about 1930, just before the war, 1938, 39.
You were in a Royal Variety show recently. How many of these have you appeared in?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. 8.
Really?
Yes, no knighthood yet. Not a pension, nothing. But I've got 8 certificates. That's something.
And you've got that pension to come from Liverpool Education Authority when you get it.
We'll augment it.
And you've appeared in straight plays, too?
Yeah, well...
Fairly straight.
Well, they were fairly straight when they were given to me, but I soon bent them to my own will. You know, I made them fit me in farces and comedies and things.
And what's for the future?
Well, Palladium Pantomime, and I'm already approached for one of the biggest summer seasons next year. They keep asking me when I'm going to retire. Well, I say, well, while the gentlemen keep asking me, will I do the British public a great favour, I'll do it.
I can't imagine you with your feet up. let's have record number 5. What
That's
next?
That's a jolly good idea. Well, the next one is, now we're coming to the real meat, my favourite, Tchaikovsky. Mm-hmm. I'd love Romeo and Juliet.
Theme from Tchaikovsky's Romeo and Juliet, the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra, conducted by Herbert von Karajan.
Carry on from you.
Thank you very much. What's number six?
Number six, surprise, surprise, a pop group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I hate pop groups. I really do. I mean, for me, they're a load of rubbish. And I could only be thankful I was on a desert island, away from it all, if I heard a pop group record being played. Except with one exception. Except with one exception. That's not grammatical. But I do like the Beatles, who I think started this pop scene, strangely enough. But I do think they sound civilized. And at this period, the record I'm choosing, they were the very civilized and nice young fellas. And I'd love to hear them singing All My Loving.
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you. Tomorrow I'll miss you.
The Beatles. How well could you take this loneliness of a desert island?
Now, you've asked me that twice before, and I forget what I answered you, Roy. I think I could take it. I'm a bit of a loner, really. I don't belong to any theatrical organisations. The loss of home would mean a lot to me, naturally, my family. But I think I could take it for a period, provided I know I was going to be rescued eventually.
Would you be a good castaway while you were there? Could you look after yourself?
I don't think so. Not without everything was to hand. I mean, that I could catch fish easily, that I could get coconuts easy, or breadfruit, or whatever I was going to live on.
You've spent enough years on the end of piers, you ought to know a bit about fishing.
Yeah, but I had the tackle there. What would happen on a desert island?
Would you try to escape?
No, I'd wait for the gentleman to come, you know. Come and collect me.
Your agent.
My agent, yes, he'd be after me, I think, too.
Right, let's get back to music. What's number seven?
Ah, now we're getting into my own field. You've seen me displaying my talent on the stage, I expect. I usually embody a little of Rachmaninoff's Prelude, you see,
which
I used to be able to play reasonably well.
Right key?
In the right key. Surprise, surprise, you see, I used to be able to play all of it, but at the moment, I've got less and less. I do about the first three chords now, or the first three notes.
Is that what we're going to have now?
No, you're going to have Rachmaninoff, but you're going to have the number two pianoforte concerto, which I've always thought, if I could get the loan of the Albert Hall one night and the full London Philharmonic Orchestra, and they'd let me play it in the key of C or F, I could cope with it.
Closing passage of the Rachmaninoff Second Piano Concerto with the composer at the piano and the Philadelphia Orchestra conducted by Leopold Stokowski. And now we come to your last record, Arthur. What's that?
Oh, is it gone already? Well, I'd like a record of Val Dunican. Val and I have been together the last two summer seasons, and you know when you do a long summer season, Roy, twice nightly, about halfway through the season, you find you're shutting the dressing room door because you can't stand the sound of what you're hearing over and over again, you know? But with Val, I found that I was very happy to leave my dressing room door open because his voice is soothing, he's so relaxed, he's so nice that I could sit and listen to him all night. So I would like a record of my old pal Val, and I think the one I'd like him to sing is If the Whole World Stopped Loving.
Have you ever stopped to wonder what kind of place this would be if the whole
Val Doonican. If you could take only one of the 8 records you've played to us, Arthur, which would it be?
Tchaikovsky.
Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo. I think I asked you for that last time, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
On the repeat.
And one luxury to take with you?
Well, this might surprise you. I'd like a set of golf clubs.
Mm. And
And a lot of golf balls, of course, naturally.
Are you a good golfer, a keen golfer?
Well, keen. I'm keen, but not good. That is the point, you see. I've been no better than 18 handicap, although I've been captain and president of the Stage Golfing Society. I've never bettered myself. And when I was captain, I used to play against the household brigade and the law. And when my opponent, who was usually a learned judge or something, saw me slashing away at the ball, he'd say, "Hey, say, Askey, who are the best players in the Stage Golfing Society?" And I used to say, "Well, I'm afraid, Your Lordship, they're actors you've never heard of, because they've had a lot of time to practice, which I never have."
And one book, from the Bible and Shakespeare.
Well, I should say a golf book, Henry Cotton or Ben Hogan, which should tell me how to keep my head down, how to put my feet and keep my left arm straight and all the things that I've never learned, you see.
Right. And thank you, Arthur Askey, for letting us hear your Desert Island Discs. See you again on the island in 1981.
Thank you. That's me as an old man.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
The guest in today's programme is Arthur Askey. The interviewer was Roy Plumley, and the producer, Ronald Cook. Arthur Askey is now appearing in Robinson Crusoe at the London Palladium.
You've been listening to a podcast from the Desert Island Discs archive. For more podcasts, please visit bbc.co.uk/radio4.